Now, as an example, I want to go to something that's in the 10th chapter. So this is, in one sense, an example of this text 53, but in another sense, it's another class altogether, discussion of how the Lord in his Virat Rup, because the Virat Rup is discussed in several of the chapters of the second canto, and if you haven't noticed, Virat Rup is a difficult subject matter to understand. It's one of the Lord's forms, but it's material. But the Lord's all spiritual. So, but it's not imaginary, but it's temporary. It's complicated. Twists and turns, and you gotta drive really slow when you go through that curved area. It can't be understood by our speculative capacities, that's for sure. So here's a section where, again, Virat Rupa is being discussed, and the theme goes like this. Knowing that the living entities are desiring enjoyment in various ways, the Lord in his Virat Rupa manifests certain limbs or senses, and that's his own Virat Rup limbs, then he manifests demigods for controlling those limbs or senses of the conditioned soul, and then he manifests the potency for the living entities to have such limbs and senses themselves. And there's like 20-25 verses like that. Knowing that the living entity has desire X, the Lord manifests the sense organ or the limb related to the sense experience X. And then the demigod, and then the sense capacity for the living entity with the explanation given that if the Lord can't see, how can we see? Therefore, the Lord has eyes in his Virat Rupa, and therefore, we have eyes that can see. I'll give a couple of examples from text 24-25, but what's being presented here is a manifestation of a principle. The principle is from chapter 7. The Lord is the cause of all causes, without which we don't have any other causes and effects. I'll read with you. Text 50. Brahma to Narada. My dear son, I have now explained to you in brief the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the creator of the manifold worlds. Okay, we all know that. Without him, Hari, the Lord, there are no other causes of the phenomenal or noumenal existences. This stated in reverse. He's the cause of all causes. Without the cause of all causes, there's no other causes. Like, take the living entity from the body. We're discussing this. And what happens? All the causes and effect things that happen within the bodies shut down. The integrating factor taken away, everything disintegrates. You don't have electrochemical events in the neurons anymore. The causes and effects that the scientists say that's what consciousness is. Take away the soul, you don't have that. It shuts down. It disintegrates. So similarly with creation, because the Lord manifests in his own Virat Rupa, then the living entities can have some sensory experience. Because without the cause, you don't have the secondary cause or the tertiary cause and effect. You don't have the downstream cause and effect. Because the cause, then you can have the downstream cause and effect. So this is a way that we can see the Supreme Lord even within sensory perception. Here's 24. Thereafter, the Supreme Person desired to perform varieties of work, and the two hands and their controlling strength, and Indra, the demigod in heaven, became manifested, and also the acts dependent on both the hands and the demigod. What was that? Here's the purport. In every item, we can note, with profit, that the sense organs of a living entity are never independent at any stage. The Lord is known as the Lord of the senses, Rishikesha. Yes? Rishikesha, Lord of the senses. Thus, the sense organs of living entities are manifested by the will of the Lord. And each organ is controlled by a certain type of demigod. No one, therefore, can claim any proprietorship of the senses. Living entities controlled by the senses. The senses are controlled by the demigods. And the demigods are the servants of the Supreme Lord. That is the arrangement in the system of creation. The whole thing is controlled ultimately by the Supreme Lord. And there's no independence either of the material nature or of the living entity. The illusion living entity who claims to be the Lord of his senses is under the clutches of the external energy of the Lord. Going back to why we hear about the Lord controlling and creating through his external energy, so, you know, we can let go of that falsely claiming ourselves to be in that position, when in fact we're under the control of the external energy. It's like, you know, a child saying silly things. I'm controlling the sun and the moon. Right? Now take your subject, your chapati. As long as a living entity continues to be puffed up by his tiny existence, he is to be understood to be under the stringent law of the external energy of the Lord. There's no question of liberation from the clutches of illusion, Maya, however one may declare himself to be a liberated soul. So now, that's the principle. And here's the next example. Thereupon, or thereafter, because of his desiring to control movement, his legs became manifest, and from the legs the controlling deity named Vishnu was generated. By his personal supervision of this act, all varieties of human being are busily engaged in dutiful occupational sacrifice. We can't move without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, without the Lord's manifesting in his Virat Rupa the instruments and capacity for movement. He did this knowing the living entity's desire. So he manifests this universe and the form of the universe all because the living entities have these desires. They want to go here and there and enjoy fruit of activities apart from the Lord. So he makes that arrangement. And this is how he makes that arrangement, through the agency of his energies. He has this universal form. He manifests features of his universal form, and the demigods for controlling, and the senses, and the capacity. It's a big, big ordeal, because we have this little pain, because I want to enjoy things. Independent, of course, which we can't. All these arrangements. I mean, the whole chapter just goes on and on and on. All these arrangements. Those of you that have children, how many arrangements do you make for your children? They don't have a clue how many arrangements you make for your children. You're very busy making so many arrangements. And Krishna's, where do we get that propensity? Krishna does. We're just the little micro specks of what Krishna does. So many arrangements because of these little desires. And why do parents do? Because they love their children. Why does Krishna do it? He loves part and parcel of the entities. What does he really want? He wants them to come back to him. Stop being rebellious. But even the rebellious, he doesn't stop being a loving father. And how does he do it? This is disclosing how he does. So, like little children, they may not be interested in, I don't care what my mother, father do to take care of me. I just want to be taken care of. But a more responsible child would want to know, how do mommy and daddy do this? Well, this is how we do this. It's being disclosed by Brahma. How the Supreme Lord manifests the senses so we can try to enjoy sense enjoyment and get entangled. Because that's what we want. We don't want the entanglement part, but we want the enjoyment part, so here's how he does. And then provides the correction to the medium of the scripture. So we don't have to think independently. We can think affectionately and gratefully and lovingly. With devotion. Devote those senses and the activities of the senses to the master of the senses. The cure of the material disease. So Prabhupada explains, what do they do with these senses? This, you know, very eloquently describes sense gratification. Going here, going there, big cities, skyscraper buildings, motor cars, running around, zoom, 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 trying to enjoy. Enjoy, 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 like children, running around, running around, running around, trying to enjoy. Purpose of life doesn't matter, just enjoy. Just let's play. But they do not know how to make the activities purposeful to fulfill the mission of human life. Because they do not know the secret, all their activities are targeted towards all the sense gratification without control. Rapparome. Play unlimitedly. And therefore, by all this business, they are unknowingly entering into the deep, dark regions of darkness. Being captivated thus by the external energy of the Supreme Lord, they have completely forgotten the Supreme Lord. Thus they have taken it for granted that this light, as presently manifested under the conditions of material nature, is all in all, and enjoying the highest amount of sense gratification. This is the wrong conception. And it can't bring peace. It can't bring you go that path and you get slammed. You get hurt. You hurt others. You get pain. Hello, there's the signal. You've chosen the wrong application. The instrument in your hand is for hammering a nail, not for banging your head. Don't keep using it that way. Hello. It hurts. Oh, that should tell you you should stop because it hurts. Don't you get the message? Let's go through it again. Here's the hammer, there's the nail, boom. Very foolish. Very foolish. But not knowing this very basic clue, what are these senses meant for? Their higher purpose, their ultimate purpose, the aim of life, what is it? What is it? Not having that clue, it's pursuit of sense gratification. I mean, I'll just spin out on this a little bit. In the course of this travel, in a visit in Singapore, I found from the devotees there that the two biggest areas, the universities are glowing like anything in Singapore because they have opened the floodgate for StelSEM research. Because some countries, like the United States, speak very bad. It's very bad, government leaders. Very bad. Don't do this. But meanwhile, because Singapore doesn't restrict it, billions of dollars of money from the government and private agencies are going into stem cell research. Wow, what cheating. Very, very bad. Here, take this money. Very bad. You know, go down the path of what do they hope to achieve by that? What they say is one thing, and diabolical means is really their motivation. Manipulating and controlling, discovering the secrets of life, and then doing god-awful things. So, and then the other area is environmental stuff, you know, global warming. But guess what? Forget it. They know what the problem is. It's greed. Environmental stuff. The problem is greed. They don't want to control their senses and curb greed. What's this billions and billions and billions of making a better environment? This is, you know, supposing the problem is fossil fuels. Are they going to get people to stop using fossil fuels until it's gone? Fight over, what are they going to do? And so some other energy, and then they're going to fight over that. It's greed, the root problem. They don't want to touch that. The root problem is uncontrolled senses. It's not a solution. So I asked him, do you think the people that are taking this up, this is the research, that they're interested in like the higher cause, or they're interested in how much money they're going to get for doing this research? There was no hesitation in the answer to that question. The money for the research. Just like people, I'll get back to the verse, but people that are doing research on strengthening immunology research, they know what to do. There's money. He's visiting somebody, an Indian couple. His wife is doing research in immunology, and she was disclosing, I really feel bad that to do this research, I have to kill rats. You should have thought of that before you got into the research. But, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer because how are you going to test it out? You test it out on somebody other than humans to find out how to strengthen the immune system. I said that, no, meanwhile, since you know this is your field, immunology, do you have any recommendations? Oh, yes, you went to the kitchen. Here's some chyawanprash. It's really good for building the immune system. What are you doing? Killing rats to make some money and get a degree when you know exactly what the answer to the question is before you start. It's greed. This is a devotee. Chanting 16 rounds. Greed. what about that core thing? No solution, right? Scientific research. Not at all. I'll come up with some alternative energies. It's not gonna, so it's just gonna move a big pile of rock from this shoulder to that shoulder. Whatever it is. Whatever solution they come up with. The greed problem. Lust, anger, greed. Delusion. Oh, mud and mud sergeant. By such a wrong conception of life, one cannot achieve the desired peace of mind. And thus, in spite of all advancement of knowledge by the use of the resources of nature, no one is happy in this material civilization. The secret is, here it is, it's an open secret. Tell it to the sense gratifiers and it'll remain a secret. It'll just go right past them. The secret is that at every step they should try to execute sacrifice towards the path of world peace. Bhagavad Gita 18:45-46 also advises the same secret in the following verses. Sve sve karmani abhirata samsid him labhate naraha. Just read the translation. The Lord said to Arjuna, just hear from me how one can attain the highest perfection of life. Simply by discharging his specified occupational duty. So involving with the material energy through occupational duty, man can attain the highest perfection of life by worshiping the Supreme Lord and by performing sacrifice. Sacrifice. We want to enjoy. We don't want to sacrifice. Why should I sacrifice to enjoy? Just enjoy. Shortcut. Sacrifice for the sake of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who is all-pervading, and by whose control every living being acquires his desired facilities according to his personal propensity. Last paragraph and we'll end. There is no harm in having different propensities in life, because every human being is proportionately independent to chalk out the plan of his life by different occupations. But one should make it a point in his life to know perfectly well that he is not independently absolute. Excuse me, he's not independent absolutely. One is certainly under the control of the Supreme Lord and under different agencies, like meaning like demigods and the energies of the Lord controlled by the demigods. Knowing this, what should we do? Make it a point that by his work and the result of his labor, he serves the Supreme Lord as prescribed by the authorities, expert in transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. For performing such occupational duties of life, the leg is a most important instrument of the body, because without the help of the leg, one cannot move from one place to another. Therefore, the Lord has special control over the legs of the human beings, which are meant for performing yajna. Same understanding. Just the other morning in Los Angeles, this verse from the fourth canto where Narada comes to visit the home of King Prajñāvari, or the palace of King Prajñāvari, recognizing the king got off track. The king is a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj. And the glory of Dhruva Maharaj also a disciple of Narada, and Uttanapada, and Priyavrata, and all the lineage of kings. Here's this king, he's going off the road. Narada comes to pull him back to the center of the road. But how the sons of Prachinibari, the Prachetas, were trained, how kings, those who were to give protection to the citizens, the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, are to provide direction and protection. How they were trained is Prabhupada explains, it's very clear. The principles, there's tapasya, but what's the purpose of tapasya? Prabhupada explains, whatever sacrifices or whatever undertakings there are to improve the well-being of society, charitable, something to bring betterment to society. People do that all the time. The aim should be pleasing the personality of Godhead. So just like that's what's happening here in this canto. And that's what Prabhupada is saying about the duties of Varnashram, where you get senses, you get some facility, you want to do something, so the tendency of enjoyment is there. Take that tendency of enjoyment and direct it towards the well-being of others. But the personality of Godhead needs to be the target, and not just a name. One needs to be conscious of the personality of Godhead, who He is. Not just accept that there is God. This whole second canto, Maharaj Parikshit, it's responding to Maharaj Parikshit's question about the Lord's creating. He's Maharaj Parikshit. He knows that there's a Supreme Lord who creates everything. He even knows how He does it. We discussed this last night. But He's asking how He does it. So it's not, it's not just repetition. He wants to have the realization from the one who has the realization. Shukadeva Goswami. He wants realized knowledge. That's what he wants. He wants realization of the personality of Godhead. Not just information. Realization. Transformation of heart. Through the association of qualified personalities. That's what we should be after in Bhagavatam also. Not just information. Oh, I learned a lot of nice things. How our hearts can be changed so that we can address ourselves in our occupational duties, or whatever duties of life that we're fulfilling as an employee or as a citizen or as a member of the family, or wife or husband, or parent or child. How do we do our various duties? Conscious of the personality of Godhead, to dedicate the sense activity, the leg in this case, to carrying us to the position where we can perform yoga. And if our consciousness is there, our legs will carry us there. And if our consciousness is there when we're there, we'll assimilate the desired goal, that is attachment to the personality of Godhead, seeing behind the activity the personality of Godhead. That's Krishna consciousness. Training should be like that. And we're being trained to become Vaishnavas, because in the structure of the world, at the top of the pyramid is those who are devotees of the Lord, dearmost to the Lord, Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. We're getting that training, whatever our background may have been, we're getting that training. And then we have a duty to do for society according to that training. The capacity that we've received permits us to then serve society. Give the real thing, though. Don't give the imitation thing. And that's going to be possible only if you receive the real thing properly. Life of responsibility. Efficient consciousness. Okay. Any discussion on these two verses? These facilities, well-placed person doesn't necessarily have qualities. Facilities. Yeah. Some persons have nice qualities. How should we think? Due to past piety, here this person is now decorated with facilities. He's a pious person. Now, how are they using that facility? That's another thing. And depending upon how they're using that facility currently, you know, their disposition of heart, it tells us something about how we can serve them. I'll give an example. This recently happened. One devotee very kindly made an arrangement for an international ticket to go to India. His brother has upgrades with Goldman Sachs, and so he got an upgrade. So I was able to fly to India and back in the business class seat, which was a lifesaver. Because I can't sleep in planes, but I was able, there's enough space, and I was able to sleep going and coming on the international travel. And for almost the same price, slightly more, you can take another journey. So from Chicago, Delhi, Chicago, went nonstop. So I came to Los Angeles and had a business class seat. So the person next to me, there wasn't much exchange, but I was in the aisle seat, he was in the window seat, he had to use the bathroom. So I could tell from his mood what he just didn't want to disturb me. He was being respectful. I don't know, you know, what particularly was motivating him to be respectful, but that was his disposition. So he got out without me having to stand up. And there's enough space within the business area. And then when he came back, same way, I was working on my computer and didn't want to disturb. So he went, when he sat back, with his coat, this, you know, the coattail or the jacket that he was wearing, hit a glass of water and spilled right in the seat. And it's, you know, really nice seat. The water didn't leak out. It was just this big lake of water in his seat that he had to sit down in because, you know, all the seats were filled. I was thinking, phew. Here's this man who is trying to do something nice for a devotee, and he ends up with a seat in a lake full of water in his seat. And his concern wasn't he's going to have to sit in a wet seat. His concern was he knocked over my glass of water. So we busied ourselves, took some blankets that were there for us, and took up all the water and put down a newspaper and then another fresh blanket on top so he could sit down. And then he was just apologizing for knocking over the water. And I said, no, it's really clear what you're trying to do. You were doing your very best to not inconvenience. He said, yes, exactly. I'm very sorry. So, that, you know, that's devotional service. Somebody else would have had a, you know, very different disposition when something like that happens. Here's a man, you know, riding in a business class seat, got a completely soaked seat. And he wasn't concerned about his, you know, having to sit in a completely soaked seat. He was concerned about my discomfort. That's a nice quality. So, one can see a person that has some asset or has some facility, some due to past piety. Now, how are they going to use it? What's the present disposition? Am I the enjoyer of that? Or does one remain humble and try to render some service? And we can look at ourselves also, whatever facilities we have. I'm so-and-so. Terrible. Not materially or spiritually. So how, when so what the concern is not so much what someone has, but the consciousness they carry. Because a person that has nothing can be very elevated personality. And a person that has a lot can also be very elevated. It's not what they have. It's what they have or don't have is their past and then the present. Well, in all cases, we're servants, and what we should do is try to serve. And sometimes trying to serve others is just set a nice example. Conduct ourselves in such a way that will attract people to Krishna by our qualities, by our speech, by our conduct. So, that address your question? That's our mistake. We're servants. We should want to encourage all persons to come to Krishna's lotus feet, whatever their position might be. And we should act appropriately in the various circumstances that life presents before us to accomplish them. If that's our aim, our humble will be protected by that humble mood of service, and Krishna will empower us more and more to be able to impact the lives of others as an instrument of Krishna. Something else? Yes. Understand that? Well, you should keep your consciousness. It is like a gardener. A gardener needs to know what's the desired plant and what's the weed. And when he waters, both will grow. Does water only go to the desired plant, not to the weeds? Water also goes to the weeds. And my experience is, weeds grow faster than the desired plant. Generally. And they grow so quickly, they start to choke the supply of even light and water from the desired plant. So what our program should be is when we see the weeds of material desire growing in the heart, we don't just, you know, snip them at the top, we uproot them. Like like a vigilant gardener. So how we should understand the situation is, we received the seed of bhakti, and we planted that seed of bhakti carefully within our heart, and through the hearing and chanting process, we're watering the seed. We should also understand that there's other desires in the heart, and as, not just now, but as we go along also. The desires, material desires, may become many, or they may become subtle. Subtle like, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, labha puja pratishta. You become a little spiritually accomplished, and you can become proud of that little spiritual accomplishment. Or someone starts to praise you. Oh, you've done so nicely with your spiritual accomplishment. You start to... Yes, I've... Or some, you get some title, some position, some wealth. Maya. Those things happening in the life of a devotee is not Maya. It's how we regard. If we see those things separate from Krishna, then it's Maya. Maya means seeing something separate from Krishna. Very simple. Material is seeing things separate from Krishna. Spiritual is seeing things, same thing in relation to Krishna. Makes it really simple, doesn't it? So, see in relation to Krishna. As something is growing in my heart that has nothing to do with the teachings of devotion, out. And don't just issue the command and assume that it happened. You vigilantly usher that foreign, unwanted entity to the door and close the door. Out, out. Far from the door. Residual tendencies linger, like bad odors. There's some rotting garbage, and you see the rotten garbage, and you clean it and throw it out, clean up the place, and still there's this stench. Even the place has been cleaned. Residual tendencies, even after being vigilant. So you have to be very careful and depend upon Krishna. Krishna speaks about this in the chapter 13 verses of Bhagavad Gita. The darkness born of ignorance. Agyanajamthama. Krishna personally takes care of that. Residual tendencies. But we need to stay dependent upon Krishna. So that's directly from the purport, and it's directly the answer to your question. So stay dependent upon Krishna. When those material tendencies arise, stay dependent upon Krishna. Remove, stay dependent upon Krishna. Stay dependent upon Krishna. Even while you're doing the removal. I had this discussion in Boston with the question and answer session. Someone was saying, when I get inspired that I have some realization about something I need to improve on, I get real excited and start to work on it, and then I lose that enthusiasm, and you know, I lost track of the whole thing. Because we get in the mode of passion thinking something, inspired to do something better, inspired to remove something unwanted. We start getting into the I'm a doer consciousness. Get Krishna. You're lost again. Run out of gas real fast. Empty. No enthusiasm. What happened? abide always with Krishna. That's what to do. But the circumstances you brought up. Krishna's protection is always there. Stay close to Krishna. Anything else? There's certainly no harm if they just respect it on their shelf and don't need it. There's specific verses that say even that one gets great benefit by keeping in one's home Srimad Bhagavatam and respecting it, meaning not defiling, not just, you know, using it as a weight for something. If one is to understand, if the person can even that much just respect it, if not read it and assimilate it, it's beneficial. And who knows, that one day, in an hour of distress or at a point of curiosity, you may, it's no harm. There's a whole program, Shastra Dan, conducted out of San Diego and throughout all of Southern California, where they have racks of books set up in places. People have contributed money for the printing of the books, so they put them in racks and, you know, please take one. There's some little pamphlet that says, please at least read it. Or it goes on like in a systematic way, or just in an occasional way, someone that you know and you care about. Like many of the people at least some of the people that come to your home for programs are coming out of social obligation. They're not really going, so is there any harm in that? No. There's spiritual benefit. They come out of social obligation and they hear the holy name and message of Krishna consciousness and go home. You do the same other things without any change, you know, external formal change, but there's some impression each time they come. They're building their, you know, Agyata Sukriti account. So that someday they may voluntarily do something. Without social obligation. So I'm saying, some of those people, give them a Bhagavad Gita and it sits, they say, oh, thank you. It sits on their shelf. When I was visiting in Hyderabad, I went to some home program and I forgot to bring my Bhagavatam with me and I asked, could you find out if the host has Srimad Bhagavatam in his home? Oh yes, he has a whole set of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he had to remove the plastic cover from the Bhagavatam that was on his shelf. This is a devotee, initiated devotee. But there's spiritual benefit just that it sits on his shelf. And one day, maybe some parts of it. Anything else? Why are you, is it a numerical question? Why are there so many? Your question isn't why don't they feel their suffering. Your question is why so many? Well, the spiritual world is filled with living entities, and some portion of them manifest rebelliousness, and so they come to the material world. Why so many people in the prisons? They're rebellious. And why so many? Because there's a lot of rebellious living entities. The number of living entities is unlimited, and a large number are rebellious. And so many varieties of species indicate varieties of reactions to their rebelliousness, according to guna and karma. Why are they rebellious? There's no good reason. There's a lot of bad reasons, but no good reason. But they're rebellious. They have free will, they misuse their free will, and a lot of them. You know, the main thing, actually bringing it home, we're here too. The first business is, let's fix our problem. Our rebelliousness. And then we may have some desire, like Prahlad, where we want to take other living entities with us. We don't want to go, Prahlad said, I don't want to go back without taking all these fools and rascals with me. He's using that language, but it's not like condemning them, but understanding, look at the foolishness of this. How much suffering they must be undergoing. I don't want to go without them. You know, we're mostly thinking, I want to get away from these people. Prahlad is thinking, I want to rescue these people. So our own rebelliousness is our main project right now. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, Jai.